Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 97 for March 6, 2009. Kumo, as in sumo. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. For a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting for your PC or Mac, visit GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers all things Microsoft, Zune, Windows, and Zune.
And you started that so fast, I'm not even ready.
And
is it time, or are you just saying this?
And here he is. He's still not wearing any pants, but he's going to do the show no matter what. Mr. Paul Thurrott. How are you, Paul?
Good. Hey, actually, I have to say this. I have to tell you this story now. My friend Dave, who listens to the podcast, will appreciate me both mentioning his name and telling the story, which is that I got to go into that sushi restaurant wearing a suit. We had to go to Awake yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's an elderly friend of the family, essentially. So, I mean,
he had a good life. That's what you say. He had a good full life.
Full so, life. We went there afterwards, and of course, this is the place where I wear my shorts every day. So when I walked in a suit, I think the woman at the front desk almost had a heart attack, which was pretty funny.
She'd never seen you that way. And of course, the first thing people say is, "Did somebody die?"
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't see you in the suit.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you ever see Paul Thurrott in a suit,
something has gone horribly wrong.
Something has gone horribly wrong, or horribly right.
You know, I guess it's weddings and funerals.
Yeah, weddings. It could be a wedding, but that would be horribly wrong too, considering you're already married.
Well, not my wedding. I mean,
a wedding. Somebody else's wedding. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, is there anything to talk about today in the Windows world? It seemed like a very quiet week.
You know, I thought the same thing, but once again, assembling the notes, there's all kinds of stuff going on. It's actually kind of crazy.
And it's of course, crazy week. It is, right?
We're recording this early, so you'd think there'd be even less.
It's only halfway through the crazy week.
That's right.
So what's the deal? What's the latest?
Yeah. So the big one is, over the past few weeks, I've had contact with, i.e. I've seen or have in my possession, a number of interim builds, newer interim builds of Windows 7.
Oh, that's exciting. How do we get those?
Yeah, right. So I think they're available through the illegal channels, if you're familiar with
But Microsoft's not like updating people who have
No, they don't like to update people officially. We have to do what we have to do. Okay. So, well, some of the builds I saw last week, I met with Microsoft and they had some newer builds, which was very interesting. But the very latest one actually leaked publicly to the internet last night. And it includes, unlike these other interim builds, an interesting new feature. You know, basically what I've seen is some icon changes, you know, a bunch of new wallpaper, that kind of stuff. But in build 7048, which is available now on your favorite BitTorrent site, apparently, you have the capability to remove Internet Explorer 8 from Windows 7. And this is a capability that has not been available in Windows, I don't want to say ever, because it has been possible. I want to say back in Windows, I don't know, maybe 98 timeframe, but not for a long, long time, certainly.
I guess the question is that for the EU? Why did they put that in?
Yeah, so Microsoft hasn't said anything about it today yet, and we're recording this on Wednesday. I would imagine by the end of the week, they'll say something about it. So there are a few possibilities, right? They're just testing it, right, just in case something bad happens. You know, the EU could come back and September, right as Microsoft is getting ready to launch Windows 7 and say, hey guys, sorry, actually we're going to need you to remove the browser.
Right.
So maybe they're just testing that functionality. They could be testing it specifically for what will eventually become that N edition that they'll release for the EU. And maybe in addition to removing Media Player, they'll just proactively remove or allow you to remove Internet Explorer as well, right? Because that's only sold in Europe. Or maybe this literally is a little end run around the EU. They'll just put it in Windows 7. We'll all have this capability. And thus, this investigation is suddenly quite moot.
What happens when you remove Internet Explorer 8? I mean, is it really gone, or is it just...
Well, right. So it removes the the end user application, obviously, and any links to it,
right,
from the OS, because obviously
you would only do that after you've downloaded and installed Firefox.
Hopefully, yeah. right. I haven't actually. You know, it's funny. I have the build, and I'm in fact I'll be posting shots of it after we're done here, but. I haven't done that sort of testing. In other words, what happens if you uninstall IE and then want to install Firefox? You know, how would you do that? I don't know. So,
right.
Was that a hatchet I just saw?
Yeah.
Go by?
Yeah.
Or an axe? Like
it was kind of a Molly hatchet. It's a new wipe, you know. I just thought we'd make it kind of a more macho show for those watching at home.
right.
Yeah.
I'll wear a loincloth next time.
Yeah, would you? Yeah.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to distract you.
No, it's okay. It's up in the corner, and I just saw like a little axe.
Some people listening at home probably don't really know. They maybe think I threw an hatchet at you. You know,
yeah.
Kind of the Ed Ames thing. No. It was a what we call in the business a wipe. And I know it's terrible.
To which my brother would say, You're a wipe.
I got your wipe right here. So, because we do stream the video, sometimes Leo gets bored or in this case, accidentally with his elbow hits something. And, and what would be a normal, simple dissolve from one camera to another becomes an adventure.
This is the modern equivalent of the sheep's crock or whatever that's called. They kind of put it out toward you if you're going on for too long and they want to pull you off stage.
Oh yeah, the shepherd's crook. Yeah. Or a sheep's crock. That would be okay too. So this is I don't know where these axes came from. but when they cross, watch what happens. Boom. Mm-hmm. It just changes into something new and exciting. So that's that's why we call that a wipe. The only place I've ever seen wipes used mm-hmm. On real TV is on Home Improvement. They would do that funny little comedy thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only place.
It's like in Star Wars, they have those really obvious wipes.
Oh, yeah.
Which are almost off-putting because they're so obvious.
Right. It's considered bad form. So I apologize.
It's okay.
Back to Internet Explorer 8.
All right, let's just start over from the top because I forget what it was. No, I mean, that's most of it. So I think that this is really interesting, and I actually kind of hope it's in there for good, because I think this is a smart way to shut the EU right up, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, just leave it in there.
But isn't there some irony? Because didn't Microsoft, in its defense against the Department of Justice, say you can't remove Internet Explorer?
I believe they did a demo showing that it would just kill Windows.
You can't do it. Sorry.
But. To be fair to Microsoft, a lot has changed since then, right? They componentized Windows.
That's true.
In Windows Vista, have probably improved the componentization with not server core, but the MinWin kernel and so forth.
Right. Win 7. Maybe they did make it this way. Hey, I wonder if that'll be like on the feature list. And now with detachable
feature 301.
Detachable browser.
We've removed half of the applications. Now we're going to remove a few more.
Tear away browser.
We can remove it all. You know, push us hard enough. This thing will be a boot animation, and then we'll turn off the PC. I don't know.
Welcome to Windows 8. Now, goodbye.
Yeah. Click here if you'd like to provide feedback.
The only reason you would do this is for the EU. Is there a corporate reason? I mean, I guess a corporation could specify we won't let you.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing, right? So will this feature be controllable via group policy? That's an unknown at this time. I think I'd say to that one, most people that are most companies that are Microsoft shops obviously probably want Internet Explorer as it is. But that's an interesting capability, right? If for whatever reason you want to move on to a WebKit-based browser or Firefox or whatever, not having IE running is a plus, because that's one less thing you have to patch. And let's face it, IE is probably the subject of about 50% of the patches that Windows gets these days. So not a bad idea.
Yeah. All right. Well, well done. IE8. Now without IE8.
That's right. You can have it with the flavor crystals, or maybe you like
with
yours.
With or without. Yeah. Flavor free. Oh, geez. I get another transition.
What was there. That? I don't really have the video.
It was a flying fortress.
Okay. Like a plane.
It was a plane. Just ignore that. Microsoft, I'm looking at your bullet points. We're going to get to, in just a bit, the Kumo search engine.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Sumo with a K. Microsoft's strategic update
which is strategic with an S.
Strategic with an S. And Paul announces he's dumping the iPhone. This is shocking. Shocking.
It's not you, it's me.
Shocking. It's not you, it's me. And yes, for those of you who were hoping we would have a Kindle-free show, there is going to be one. In fact,
are there people hoping for Kindle-free shows?
Oh, there's people hoping for everything, but they're not going to get it. There's people hoping for a pony.
Now, see, I just triggered emails. That's what bugs me. I unfortunately, by asking this rhetorical question,
Paul Thurrott is an email trigger.
You're
an email trigger. Actually, this will annoy everyone because it is a Kindle update that includes Apple.
Yes.
And the iPhone.
Actually, I should pre-announce the one thing we're not going to discuss this week.
Yes.
Are any of the Mac updates that occurred.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's been done.
So there.
It's been done. No need to.
Has it been done? I don't even know.
We have a show called Mac Break
Weekly. We have a show for that.
And for once, Apple actually made its announcements before the show. Usually they wait till we're done. They did with the Amazon's now picking up on Apple's.
I know.
They waited till we were done. Mm-hmm. And then they released the iPhone app. Anyway, we're going to talk about that in just a second. I do want to mention our friends at GoToMeeting, Citrix, the fine folks at Citrix who do the very handy business tool called GoToMeeting. You can try it for free right now. In fact, if you go right now to gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly, and I would guess that sometime before I'm done, you will have already installed your copy of GoToMeeting. Now, here's what's going to happen. No, by the way, no money will change hands. It's absolutely free. You will install GoToMeeting. And suddenly now, when you're on a conference call and you're frustrated because you want to show somebody, you know, a drawing or a PowerPoint, you want to say, hey, let me show you what happens now with IE8 and Windows 7. Oh, you don't have the new Windows 7? Well, I do. Let me show you. Go to GoToMeeting.com. They log in. Actually, they don't even have to log in. All they need is a meeting ID. They don't have to create an account. They don't have to download software. Just the meeting ID. Now they're seeing your computer on their screen. They see your desktop. They see the PowerPoint, the slides, the Windows, installer. It's really kind of amazing. A great way to make a boring conference call exciting. What are you laughing at? You've been on a few of these.
I've never been on a boring conference call.
You're the guy in the boring conference call who's playing solitaire.
Quick
yeah. Who's there? He's answering his email.
Do I hear aliens dying on your house, Paul? What does that sound?
I'm talking to Vorak, and you hear typing the whole time on the phone.
Right.
See, this is better. This engages them. This makes them, first of all, they're looking at something. They can still type, but they're looking at something on the screen, which is your presentation. 30 days free. Find out why Citrix really is the best in the business. GoToMeeting is fantastic. You'll travel less. You'll get more done. And by the way, now it works, not that you would care, on Macs as well as Windows. Go to meeting, meet with anyone, anywhere, at any time. One low flat monthly rate. Did I mention that for unlimited use? GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. Try it free today. I know you're going to love it. Microsoft's strategic update. What strategic update? But did you talk to Mr. Ballmer?
No, Mr. Ballmer spoke to Wall Street last week. In fact, this happened before we had the last podcast, but I hadn't really gone over the information. And I guess to excuse myself, actually, I was in New York at the time, if I remember correctly. Was that last week?
I think so.
I have so many trips, I can't even keep them.
I think last week, yes.
So anyway, over the weekend, I finally went and looked at this stuff. And interestingly, there's some good info in there. And oddly enough, if you're familiar with Microsoft's website, you know, you can go to Microsoft.com/PressPass and you can get a lot of their, you know, the information they provide to the press, but also corporate information. But this particular event is not covered in PressPass, nor is it mentioned on Steve Ballmer's page, which is really strange. Instead, it's on their investor site. But what he did during this event was he talked about what he called Microsoft's 7 core businesses, as well as a number of other side businesses. And what the impact of the economy would be on these businesses this year, how they were doing in the market compared to their competitors. You know, lots of good information, actually. And if you go to the Microsoft investor site, you can download his presentation. You can watch a webcast of the event, and you can also download a transcript if you just want to read it. But what's interesting, if you parse through this event, you know, he actually reveals some very interesting information. And I wrote an article about some of it, and I sort of highlighted the seven core articles. But there's a couple things I wanted to discuss here. One was that he said by far that the number one competitor to Windows is not, you know, Mac OS 10. It's not Linux. It's pirated versions of Windows. You know, and he kind of made a crack about this at the time. He said, you know, it's tough because they have a great product, but the price is way lower than what we charge. So that's interesting, right?
That,
so,
I guess you're right. I mean, in terms of market share, there's probably more people using pirated versions of Windows than there are Mac or Linux. I guess that's probably true.
According to the chart he had, it was by far, by a factor of five or six. It was crazy. And this, I think, in some ways,
how do they know, though? I mean, how would they know how many people are stealing it?
Yeah, probably from the automatic update stuff. You know, people still need to get the software updates.
Oh, yeah, I guess they could probably update. Yeah.
You know, you can. I'm sure there's some sort of information passing there that will identify, you know, systems that aren't, let's say, activated properly.
It's in the telemetry.
That's exactly right. So you speak just like a Microsoft guy.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. The other thing he hinted at was the possibility of, and he didn't say it this way, but of what I assume would be a Zune set-top box. He mentioned the fact that Microsoft and or its partners could create a set-top box that would sit in the living room and not be an Xbox 360. It would basically just be the digital media stuff and interact with PCs on the back end. In other words, outside of the other initiatives that they have in the living room, like Media Center.
And you do this because the Zune sells so well and such a recognized brand?
Well, no. So now the Zune thing was really interesting to me because obviously when you look at their entertainment and TV business, the only thing that's making any money basically is the Xbox, right? Zune obviously has not done very well at all. He referred to the Zune devices, you know, the portable devices that compete with the iPod as an other business. He actually didn't include them in this thing. He said, obviously, they support the Zune business, but he doesn't even though that is really the only way you can carry this stuff around right now, he actually sees that as a side business in a support capacity. And he thinks that the future of Zune is actually going to be the inclusion of that software on Windows mobile devices, on the Xbox 360, and on this as yet unnamed, maybe never going to happen, you know, Zune set-top box. That it's the software and the platform that's important, not those devices. And it reminded me of the way that Apple refers to their Apple TV, right? What they call it, a hobby. You know, in other words, we're making this thing, we're updating it, we're kind of seeing how the market falls out. But, you know, Apple, along with Microsoft, along with all these other people who are playing in this market right now, have never really been successful, you know, creating a mass market device. And so it appears that Microsoft is getting ready to have at least the third or fourth initiative in the living room. I mean, if you think about Media Center, they have something called Media Show. And then, of course, the Xbox 360. I mean, this would probably, you know, if it happens, this would be the fourth major initiative for Microsoft in the living room.
Huh. But why, again, Zune? What exactly about the Zune?
Well, the Zune software is excellent, right?
But is it really? Could you use that software for a desktop box?
Yeah, because one of the things that is going to happen this year is the Zune software will be ported to the Xbox 360. And that actually kind of completes the picture for the 360 because it has basic media sharing capabilities now. You can play, you know, photo slideshows, music, and videos, and so forth. They've improved the codec support. It does, you know, AAC, and it does H.264 and all that stuff. But the interface for doing this is kind of bare bones. So one of the things that will happen this year is they're going to port that Zune UI to the Xbox. Certainly, that hardware has the capacity to handle that kind of thing. I think for non-gamers, getting them to pay probably at least $100 extra to get an Xbox 360 is not a great proposition, right? And again, not to beat it to death, but unless you have a brand new 360, they're not particularly well suited, right, for the living room because they're loud and they're hot and they're not the type of thing that you can stick into a stereo cabinet and then not worry about. You know, the thing will overheat. So, you know, having a Roku type box or a, you know, like the WD HD media player we talked about a few weeks ago, something like that where it's small, silent, it runs cool, I think would make a lot of sense. So, you know, again, he didn't say specifically we are going to do this, but he did say they were looking at it.
Huh. I wonder if he's floating a trial balloon to see if anybody jumps up and down and says, "Ooh, Zune."
I think the reality is, as a standalone business, that device he talked about will do just as poorly as all these other devices, right? But there is this, and I do believe in this, you know, there's this feeling that the living room can be one of the huge markets, right? The PCs on desks or laptops, big market. You know, cell phones and smartphones, huge market. People spend a lot of time in front of their TVs. You know, if Microsoft could get an attach rate to the TV market, right, where some software of theirs was being sold and licensed with every TV, with every cable box, with whatever it is, yeah, that's a lot of money. And so they're really, you know, I don't want to say they're hell-bent on it, but they certainly have been trying. I mean, Media Center and the Ultimate TV stuff, the web TV stuff they did over a decade ago, you know, and now with the Xbox 360, I mean, they certainly keep trying. So I think a Zune set-top box, and maybe they wouldn't call it Zune, you know, for obvious reasons, is a decent idea.
I still come back to the fact that this is an operating system written for a very low-powered device with a tiny display. I don't really know. Does this make sense to?
I think it absolutely makes sense. Okay. I mean, have you, the Apple TV makes sense. You know, if you think about
it's essentially OS 10, the Apple TV.
Okay, but think about attaching an iPod with a dock to a TV.
Yeah, now, well, people do
Apple
that.
Has You're engineered right. it such a way that you can't do it with a remote easily, right? You can't navigate the UI, but you can today plug a Zune into a TV, use a remote with it,
no,
and when you
true.
Do that. You actually are using the menus and everything. With the remote.
You're right. I guess you're right. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
A slightly bigger Zune device without the portability part of it, right?
Right.
Would probably cost less than an actual Zune device. Plus, you could do the streaming media. It wouldn't have to have storage. It wouldn't have to have a lot of storage.
Yeah, of course, and the other side of it is Apple hasn't done very well with the Apple TV.
That's the thing.
I don't know if it's a great market. I think you and I think it's a great market. But I don't know.
The funny thing is I use this stuff all the time.
Yeah, I love it.
My daughter and I were home alone the other night and we had to rent a movie and I looked on demand and there was nothing. And we finally went on to the Apple TV and it was taking a while and she complained. And I said, Kelly, do you have any idea how hard it is to find a movie that both a 7-year-old girl and a 42-year-old man want to watch? I mean, you know, this is a tough proposition, but I actually did find something on the Apple TV and it was great. It's, you know, the thing comes on within a few seconds. It's not that expensive, and you don't have to leave the house. You know, it's nice.
I think that for some reason we're in the minority about this, and I don't know why. Although I do remember that TiVo took an awful long time to catch on. People just are slow to change their media habits.
TiVo has, in many ways, not caught on. Yeah. I mean, DVR is very successful today, but I think most people probably get it through their cable company.
Yeah. So I should use the phrase TiVo. I should use the phrase DVR. Although if they
you should use the phrase TiVo because I think they did popularize it, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
they deserve some credit for that.
In fact, I think if people had the choice between their cable DVR and a TiVo interface, they'd choose TiVo every time.
Every time.
But I don't think that there's widespread awareness of that. I don't think.
Well, plus when it's available, it's extra.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the thought of paying another $10 a month to a lot of people is not.
Most people have DVRs now, though, if they have cable, don't you think? Or satellite?
Yeah. Right.
I think so. So the penetration
I could attach a TiVo box to my cable with a cable card, but this is expensive.
Right.
And then it's an additional
monthly expense. Too much, too complicated.
I think
what we could probably say about this is people are set in their ways in media consumption more than they are, say, in other technology. You know, they're quick to adapt.
I know why you're hedging on that, but actually I think you're onto something because if you think about the iPod, I know you're thinking, well, hold on, you know, the iPod has been hugely successful.
Yeah.
It's still a Walkman, right? I mean, it's basically a modern Walkman. It's not that different.
Yeah. It's easy to get.
Yeah.
The vast majority of media consumers are not technologists like you and I. So technologists or the people who listen to the show, technologists are early adapters in new media technologies, but you're talking about such a big universe now when you're talking mass media and most of those people in that universe are not early adopters.
Dave Calton, who I think we had on the show once, a Microsoft guy works on the Zune team. 2 years ago, I think it was when Apple came out with the Apple TV, his off the cuff remark was, oh good. Another way to watch TV on my TV. You know, it's a tough sell, you know, this kind of box.
Yeah. It's too bad because, you know,
it is too bad.
It's the kind of thing that supports what we do. For instance, you know, we're in new media and we want people to be more flexible in how they can watch and get content.
Sure.
But I noticed that was one of the reasons we're not rushing to do downloadable videos. I noticed that even with our audience, adoption rates on downloadable videos is not very high.
Right.
That they still haven't got it set up at home that they would watch this stuff on their TV.
Yeah. I mean, you know, on demand on cable is obviously pretty popular. And I think as people get used to this notion of pretty much instant access, the notion of downloading movies, however they do it, will become easier to swallow it.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on to Kumo, which is Sumo with a K. Well, I say that. You know why I say that?
It sounds because like a Beach Boy song to me. That's what I was thinking.
The first big internet search engine was Yahoo, and its first name was akabono.stanford.edu. It was named after a very famous sumo wrestler.
Okay. Well, Kumo, I believe, is a spider.
Oh, well, then never
in
mind.
In Japanese or something, because it's a, you know, like a spider.
I thought maybe it was a tribute, a backhanded tribute.
No. All right, moving on.
What is Kumo? What is it? Is it Microsoft Search?
It is Microsoft Search.
A new name for it? Is it different than the old one?
Yeah, a little bit. I would describe it as an evolution, not a revolution. It's only available internally at Microsoft right now. There's some speculation that Microsoft may, in fact, rebrand all of their search stuff to Kumo. I don't believe that that will make a difference in the slightest. The sample screenshots they've sent out show search result pages that are divided up by sort of topics, depending on what you're searching for. So, for example, in the case of a celebrity, like a singer, you might see sections for their songs and lyrics and their albums and biography information, all that kind of stuff.
You know what this is? I mean, they've got people in Microsoft Labs working their butt off on search.
Yeah.
It's hopeless.
I think so, too.
Because Google is just hopeless. Yep. Not that I'm it's such a big Google fan.
I've never
fan.
Seen
I'd
Microsoft
see competition, but it's just...
Yeah. They're throwing so many people at this.
Yeah.
And it just, it's never made a difference. In fact, if anything, they've lost share repeatedly. Right. You know, one of the things, in fact, I could find the number right here. It says at this, I think it was January, February timeframe, in the worldwide, Microsoft has 1.7% of searches. 1.7. That's down from 2.5% in April of last year.
I should point out. Jason Calacanis told me that every 1% of search is worth $1 billion.
Okay.
So it's not a tiny business, but if you're saying we went from 2.5 billion to 1.7 billion, that's a loss.
U.S. is down as well from 9.4 to 8.5% in the same time frame. So,
but that's still a multi-billion dollar business for them.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. Obviously,
Kumo, by the way, is Japanese for cloud, I'm told by SAPD and in our chat room.
Okay.
That's a good name. I like it. Better than Azure.
Yes.
They should have used Kumo for Azure.
They could have used almost anything for Azure.
That would be better than Azure.
That would have been
Kumo,
better.
That's good. So it's cloud.
Any word that has one pronunciation would be great.
Yeah. Just one way to say it. Yeah. It would be nice. All right. Well, we'll look for Kumo in a browser near you.
I don't know. I just don't know what to think about it. I don't know what the point is.
So you're going back to Windows Mobile. I thought that was kind of interesting. After all the nasty things you've said about Windows Mobile.
Well, I have to. You know, this is one of
it's the... job.
Taking a bullet for the team. You know, I need to write like about this. Windows Mobile.
You're not going to like this.
What's that?
You're not going to be happy.
Oh, no, I know I'm not. But here's the thing that will save it. The iPhone works as an iPod, obviously, when it's not connected to the AT&T network. So if I cancel the iPhone, and I could still use the iPhone for all the stuff that I use it for now, except for phone calls. But the thing is, part of my rationale for this is I spend a lot of money on the iPhone every month, and I never use the thing. In fact, I was just looking at this. My wife, what triggered this was my wife reminded me I needed to turn off international roaming, which we always turn on before we go to Europe. It's $6 a month, but it allows you to use the thing overseas. Okay, fine. You can turn it off on a month-by-month basis, so it's simple to toggle the thing. And I started looking at the costs of what I was doing. And one of the things I noticed was I'm paying for the lowest end SMS plan you can get, which is $5 a month. But if I didn't pay for that, I could just pay per SMS. And I only send and receive maybe 2 to 4 of these a month. And I believe it's, you know, 20 cents a piece, something like that, if you're not on a plan. So actually, I'm even overpaying for that thing. So I'm thinking, well, I could cut $5 off there. I can cut $5.99 off by getting rid of international roaming. My bill would still be $80 a month. You know, $80 a month. I'm on the lowest call plan, the phone plan, right? $40 a month. 450 minutes, right? I used 43 minutes last month out of 450 available, right? I just don't use it a lot. The problem is I work at home. You know, when I travel, obviously I need to use it then, but I go away, you know, this month, three times this month, but you know, some months I don't go away. I mean, I think on average I go on one business trip a month, let's say, maybe a little bit more depending. And so I was saying to my wife, you know, it's funny, if I got rid of the iPhone, but still had it as a sort of a Wi-Fi based iPod, I could pay for Wi-Fi at every airport that I visit. And I would still pay far less in a year, you know, to access email on the road with this device than I do now just paying for the iPhone, you know? So, yeah, I'm going to keep the iPhone, but I'm going to stop using it as a phone, I guess is the way to say it. Now, I need to get a Windows Mobile phone for testing purposes,
yeah,
right?
Which one are you going to get? Which one?
That's what I don't know.
The Fuse?
Well, it's obviously you can only get some phones on some carriers. Yeah. So if it makes sense financially to stay on AT&T, if it's cheaper, I'll get one of the phones that's available on AT&T. And I believe the Fuse is one of those.
That looks pretty good. I like HTC handsets, I have to say. I think they do a great job. And those are Windows 6, Mobile 6, yeah?
Yeah.
Is there a 6? There's nobody's doing 6.5 yet.
Not yet, but there are two phones coming out soon, both of them, by the way, HTC phones, that will be upgradable to 6.5. And I actually, even if I have to wait a little while, it might make sense to do that, because I would like to be able to upgrade to 6.5.
The hexagon is in your future.
You know, doing the math, you know, again, $80 a month.
That's a lot. That's ridiculous.
That's $1,000 a year.
Yeah.
It's $1,000
a year. It's a very, you're absolutely right. Are you saying, though, that you won't end up spending that much on any other smartphone?
No, you would.
I think a smartphone is going to cost you $80.
Right. Well, okay. So the other part of the math is this. I'm not going to get a data plan on the phone that I get. I'm going to use, one of my requirements for a Windows Mobile phone is it has to have Wi-Fi as well, because I'm going to use this.
You never leave the house, so it's really
Test it here on the Wi-Fi network.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If you go to AT&T or go to Verizon and you want to get a smartphone, but you don't want to get a data plan, you don't get the subsidized fee, you know, price. You actually have to pay for the phone. Windows Mobile phones, $400, you know, $500 in some cases. You can kind of see that the money I'm saving on the iPhone is quickly getting wiped out by the cost of what I'm doing. Not to mention the fact that when I cancel my service, they're going to charge me a couple hundred dollars, I'm sure, at AT&T. I think in the end, it may in fact be a wash. But on the other side of this, what I'm going to get out of that is a Windows Mobile phone that I can test with the new stuff, right? I mean, I still have to do this. So worst case scenario, I guess, I'll end up paying the same over the next, you know, 8 or 9 months. Hopefully I'll save some money.
Yeah, I'd be very interested.
Yeah, it's crazy to me how much all this stuff costs. Okay. And I just
consider it a cost of doing business. I always have three or four phones. I have every carrier.
Sure.
So that I could test all of these. And it's just, for me, it's the cost of doing business. But
Right.
You know, if I have to also put myself in the mindset of a consumer who has a budget and has to pick one phone. And I think I still would go with the iPhone.
Well, as I write about this stuff, you know, there are some things I always harp on with the iPhone. One is the cost, you know, it's exorbitant.
Yeah.
And I you know, I think there are people that just don't see that, you know, they want this thing so badly. And look, if you can afford this, if this isn't a big deal for you, obviously, you know, go for it. But I think that the mobile data plan stuff needs to come down. And I'd also like to see some situation on the iPhone, any phone, where, you know, why is the cheapest, you know, call plan so many minutes? You know, why isn't there something that's half that? I think even a data plan that was half as expensive but had some hard stop limit would be far more interesting to me and would, I think, open these devices up to a bigger market as well.
Good article, by the way, which somebody just sent me in the chat room. In the Herald on heraldtribune.com on Cher Wang, who is the CEO and founder of HTC.
Now, this is the International Herald Tribune?
It's heraldtribune.com. I presume it is. No, I'm sorry. It's the Florida. It's a Florida paper. So this might be an AP story. I don't know. But it's from the New York Times, ultimately. It's the technology feed. But what a great article. Yeah, it must be the Times.
That was just from today or just recently?
Yeah, I think so. Charlene Wang is her name. No, okay. I'm sorry. This is from October 27th, 2008. So you'd want to go back in time. But she, her father was apparently very wealthy Taiwanese guy, developer of chip technology, plastics and petrochemicals. And but she founded HTC. She's also chairwoman of Avaya.
HTC is, are they from what, Taiwan?
Taiwan. Very interesting story. I mean, I think they really do. If you had to pick,
I do like their phones quite a bit.
Yeah. I like Nokia, but I think the HTC, if certainly for smartphones and for for Windows mobile phones, is clearly the best choice out there. They really do good stuff. Yeah. Well, I'll be very curious to see what you choose.
Kicking and screaming, I think, would be the phrase. But
well, who knows, though? You might find. I cannot wait till the Palm Pre comes out.
Yeah,
I want the iPhone to have competition. I think this is the this is a big category. It's the next big thing.
The Palm's tough for me because I think when you look at what I cover, you know, the Windows world, I'm not sure that the Pre is going to factor it in a big way yet. Although, obviously, that and the Google Android phone, you have to pay attention to that stuff. They're very interesting and they could become very, very popular. But, you know, the iPhone has just taken off in such a huge way. It's just head and shoulders above everything else right now.
And this is one of the most common questions I get is what phone? It's funny because, you know, when people learn you're a tech guy, it's really changed. It used to be, I can't get my email. And then I can't get my network working. Sure. And now it's what cell phone should I get? It really, that has become, even for the non-tech enthusiast, that is something everybody is interested in and talking about. And really, the question they're asking is, should I get the iPhone? Is almost universally what it really comes down to. Well, should I get the iPhone? And for a long time, I really equivocated. I didn't want to be an iPhone fanboy. I said, well, there's other great choices. Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I just said iPhone.
You know what? Honestly, it's iPhone and everything else. There's no doubt about that. As far as picking, if you're going to go to Windows Mobile, one thing I have noticed is you can actually make your choice pretty easily if you go to Microsoft.com. Well, that's the thing. Go to Microsoft.com/Windows Mobile.
Okay.
First, you see a huge list of phones, but filter it by carrier, for one thing. If you want the very latest version of the OS, filter it down to Windows Mobile 6.1 only.
Yeah.
And then you only have a handful of choices. And then in my case, you filter it down to Wi-Fi. You have two choices, basically.
Really?
Yeah, that's the way it works. You know, AT&T or Verizon, you're really looking at just a very small...
And they're both HTC.
Yeah, are they? Are mostly HTC. Yeah.
Fair. You know, that's interesting. So you're going to go for 6.1, no doubt.
It has to be at least 6.1 for now, And then, you know, like I said, ideally, they're not available yet, but the new versions, I think it's the Fuse and the other HTC, I don't remember, the Diamond, I think Diamond Pro, something like that.
Yeah. The Pro.
Two of the newer versions that aren't out yet will be updatable to
the Pro
6.5.
2 looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you search? I'm looking at the Microsoft site. Can you search for upgradable as well? Or is that something you
But I just happen to know that when they made the announcement, it was those two HTC models.
So I'm looking at T-Mobile. I can buy the Shadow is the only one that has Wi-Fi at 6.1.
Yeah.
I don't know. That doesn't look like a good phone. It looks clunky.
Well, I mean, a lot of them I know are bad. You know, I don't know the name of it, but the classic Windows Mobile phone is that Blackjack 2, right?
Right, which you hated.
It's utilitarian, right?
Yeah.
The newer version of that, whose name I now forget, it has a different name, but it actually has like a little joystick control thing in the middle of it. It's absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
Right? The Blackjack's okay. You know, it does the job, but whatever the new version of that thing is absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. And, you know, you want to avoid that kind of thing. By the way, one of the better looking Windows Mobile phones is actually the Palm. I forget the name
Trio?
Of it. Like Trio 700. Pro, I think.
They have a Trio Pro now. Yes.
That's actually a nice looking machine. The funny thing is they sell it direct. It's not subsidized in any way. So the thing costs about $500. It seems expensive until you start looking at the other ones and you realize these phones are actually all this expensive. It's just that they're being subsidized. So if you're in the market for a phone like I am, where maybe you're not going to get it subsidized, as it turns out, this Palm device.
Talk about expense.
Yeah. Sure. So that's something I need to sort out. But
the LG Insight is the other other one that you could get that's Wi-Fi and 6.1 and on AT&T. I'll be curious. We'll all be watching with great interest as Paul Theroux enters a brave new world.
A sad new world.
All right, let's talk about this Kindle app.
Yep.
They came out with it after MacBreak Weekly yesterday. We had speculated quite a bit because Amazon had said
Well, they said they were going to do it, right?
Well, they didn't say iPhone. They said on other, they used like other devices.
Right.
So I downloaded it immediately.
Now, what devices would it make sense you know, to release an application on?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the G1, I guess, maybe. Or maybe
so
some...
it's fine, right? I would say that the iPhone app is bare bones. You know, the text looks fine. One of the things I really like is, you know, you attach it to your account and it gives you that archived items.
Every book you've bought.
It has every
is
book
there.
You've ever bought. You know, it's fantastic. I downloaded a couple and, you know, the text looks fine, you know, that kind of thing. Obviously, the screen's small. But the big thing for me is, to change the page, if I remember correctly, you have to, flick down.
Yeah, you flick it.
I want to flick it left-right, like a book.
Oh, you could do that.
Wait, have I got it the wrong way? I don't have it in front of me.
I think you could do that. Let me see here. I got it right here.
I want to flick it.
No, you could flick it like that.
Left or up, left, down, right, or left, right?
Left, right. Let's see if up, down works. No, left, right is what you do. It seems very natural to me. I don't have a problem with it. It's, you know, it's going to kill your battery. It's not great.
That's
in
the thing.
Sunlight.
The beauty of the Kindle, obviously,
I can read
is in bed. Right. Is you can't, is it doesn't burn the battery as you're using it.
I was a little disappointed because I had one of my books is a chess book and the illustrations did not, the positions did not come down properly.
Does it do the squeezing?
It does not.
It's not.
So okay. I'm going to send them a little note.
Yeah.
Got a message. Okay, so I've been reading a book on my Kindle, too.
Yeah.
Sync to furthest page read. You are currently at location 903. The furthest location is 1054.
Yeah. That's actually really cool, right?
From Leo LaForge's Kindle at 5:43 a.m. GMT on March 4th. You want to go to that location? You say right. Yes, it goes to where you were.
In other words, you're reading a book at home. Now you're out standing in line at the grocery store. You want to read a couple pages. You can bring out your phone, read it. Then you go back home, and each time it synchronizes. And so you're always in the right place.
Pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
I mean, this is their first edition. Maybe we can send them some feedback.
It's obviously, 1.0.
You can change the font size, which is, you know, not a bad idea on a phone to be able to make it bigger. Although, I don't know.
This
it's an adjunct. You can do it without the Kindle, but I think it's an adjunct. But
years and years
now
ago,
you get a quarter of a million titles on here that you can buy on Amazon Store and get on your phone.
Friends of mine from France, for example, we're emailing back and forth this week, both before and after this happened, and they would like to get a Kindle, but they don't sell them in France.
Right.
And of course, Kindle works on the Verizon network, which isn't available anywhere but the
Sprint,
United States.
Sprint network, yeah.
So, the
CDMA, though, that's the point.
CDMA network.
Yeah.
But they can get the iPhone application and they can buy books, you know, so.
Oh, that's interesting.
So this is a way for them to this is a way for them to get into other markets as well. I think that what this is really about is Amazon attempting to become the de facto standard here, right? The de facto platform for ebooks, right? I know they're taking a loss and all the books are selling. So it seems like right now what they want to do is just establish it and then maybe later they'll go back from a position of strength, right? And they can say to the publishing companies, look, you need to give us a better deal here.
It doesn't turn sideways either, which is too bad. But I guess really it's more natural to read in the portrait.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think all of these things should be possibilities, right? I mean, they should be there.
Easy enough to add.
Yeah.
Somebody mentioned that it is not available in the EU Apple store, store. So your French friends may be out of luck.
No, they have it. I don't know.
They do. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they actually have gotten it. Yeah, okay. So I'm not sure how they did it, but they do have.
Some magic.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
Roku digital video player. Speaking of Amazon, they're going to do what is it called? It's Unbox is what Amazon calls it.
That's what it used to be called. Now it's called Amazon On Demand.
Better name.
Better name. Yeah. So basically, this is Amazon's movie streaming and download service, and when you talk about technology that makes sense, technology that doesn't make sense, you know, we talked about something like an iPhone, which is wonderful but expensive. You know, this Roku digital video player, which I always think of as the Netflix box, right? Because that's how it debuted as a way to play, Netflix instant queue movies and TV shows. This thing is $99. It doesn't incur a monthly fee. You have to be a Netflix subscriber, of course, but there's no additional fee.
I gotta get this thing.
And it's completely silent. It works wonderfully. It outputs to HD. It's beautiful. And now you can do Amazon on demand on it in addition to the
How do those movies look? Are they the same quality?
They are, yeah, they're not, you know, I shouldn't say they're not in HD, because actually they might have HD content by now. In fact, now that I'm saying it out loud, I bet they do. Amazon is when it was Unboxed, is actually a service I'd use quite a bit on the PC. And if you have an Xbox 360, by the way, this is something you can, because it's a Windows media-based format, you know, you can use your PC to download, and you know, TV shows and movies via on Amazon On Demand, and then stream them to your Xbox 360. That works as well, right? But, you know, the beauty of the Netflix box is that you can do this stuff all from the box. And it's, again, you know, $99, silent. It's just such a great little machine. It looks like a, you know, like a Western Digital hard drive. You know, you just stick it in your stereo cabinet or whatever and connect it, you know, wireless or wired, your choice. It does HDMI. It's neat.
Very cool. Yeah, I got to get this thing. $99.
Yep.
Man,
that, see, they keep
that's not the
it.
Popcorn player. That's the Roku. And then there's the popcorn.
Yeah.
Which is different.
It is different. Popcorn is way more technical.
Okay. So the Roku is the one you want. I mean, gosh, with Netflix and Amazon, that's a lot of content.
And the thing that's interesting about Roku, of course, goes back a ways. These are the guys that made those tube-like digital audio players.
Yeah, the Roku player, which I love. But yeah, yeah.
If you go to their website right now, it's all about this Netflix box.
Huh.
Right? The other stuff that they made before, you know, they've had like, you know, bedside radio things that were internet connected, and they had those tube players that you could stick in your kitchen or whatever.
Right.
They still kind of sell those, but they've clearly rallied around this one little box. And it is, it's so great. I mean, it is one of those wonderful examples of technology, actually.
It's funny. They've got a little box on their website that says, looking for information on other Roku products?
Yeah, SoundBridge. That's
SoundBridge. Are you interested in the SoundBridge? Oh, that's somewhere
else. We still sell that. But look, this thing's $99.
Look.
Well, you know, their stuff used to be real expensive, right? The SoundBridge stuff, those were always $300-$400, weren't they? I mean, when they first came out, expensive devices.
Yeah. Well, this shows you that maybe there's a bigger market for playing stuff off the cloud than for digitizing your movies, storing it on a NAS.
Absolutely. Yeah,
figuring all that stuff out. People don't want to
like
do
me
that.
Who might want to rip DVDs are the are tiny, tiny majority.
Right.
I mean, it's a stupid thing to do. It's a lot of work. You know, you have all the format issues, and it's dumb.
57% of America now has broadband, so this makes sense now at home. Right. This is
it makes sense when you can start something streaming and you just don't notice that's what it's doing. It's just like watching something on your TV. It's
my
great.
Big concern would be quality, but you're telling me.
The quality is fantastic. I mean, especially, you know, the Netflix stuff is particularly good, by the way. You know, if you're on a wired connection in
Comcast must hate this because I'm using Comcast high-speed internet at a $99 box to watch movies instead of paying, you know, $4.99
well,
for Comcast.
You're still
on demand.
Paying Comcast. I mean, arguably,
well,
you know, realizing a benefit from the service you're paying for is not, you know, your problem. I mean, there are always going to be people that pay for it and don't use
it.
So.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad for the big companies.
Now, this doesn't have Wi-Fi in it, right?
I believe it does, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. That's a pretty good deal for $99. I remember when a Wi-Fi adapter cost more than $99.
Well, I have a SoundBridge in my closet still, and back then, the Wi-Fi adapter was an extra $100. It was in a little card you had to stick it.
Right.
You know? This is a different world.
What a world. All right, let's take a break. What a world. Talk about Audible.com. It's only a matter of time before you stream in Audible stuff, too, I think. And then we're going to get, your Audible pick, then we're going to get your software and your tip of the week as well. Okay. Audible.com/Windows. That's the place to go to get your special deal on Audible. I like all of our advertisers to do this. I strongly encourage them to do this. The free trial. Because you guys are smart. And I don't think advertising should be out there to create a need that doesn't exist or to trick people. I think advertising should be, hey, we've got a great product. Would you like to try it? Here, try it free. If you like it, we'd like to sell it to you. And that just seems like that's the way to do it. So Audible is great that way. You go to audible.com/windows, sign up. You won't owe them any money. Your first month, you know, you get a book and you could try it. You don't like it, cancel, no problem. If you decide to stick around, you get a book a month. It's a great deal. And there are 51,000 books to choose from. It's kind of, I think of it as my bookstore online. And you get them fast, by the way. I mean, talk about satisfaction. It's about as fast as the Kindle. So it's a sense of an you know, you pick a book and now you got it and you can listen to it right away. You go into the gym, get a book, so you listen. I've been listening to the Glass Bead Game, which I read in high school, and I'm realizing that in every way my entire life was determined by this book. But I just because I haven't read it since high school. The guy, it's all about Chinese and because I was a chess player at the time, and it's all about this game, this imaginary game. It's a Hermann Hesse classic. It's great. I'm really enjoying listening to it. But you've got a good pick. I want to get this book.
Yeah, I read a review of this in the New York Times fairly recently, and I had been meaning to pick it up one way or the other, maybe on the Kindle or whatever. But I just noticed it's on Audible. So
I always check Audible first, because if I have a choice, yeah. I prefer to listen.
So it's called The Next 100 Years, A Forecast for the 21st Century, and it's by George Friedman. And the Audible version is unabridged, which is great. But it's basically a look ahead at, you know, from the eyes of essentially history in a way, because this person feels that we're on the edge of a new historical cycle, and that, you know, everything is. And I would say there are probably a lot of books like this right now. I have one about the singularity.
I love that book. Ray Kurzweil's book. Yeah.
Right. Which is really interesting. Yeah. And same sort of theme, that there's this, I don't want to say a consensus, but this notion that we're on the cusp of a huge change. I mean, even one of the books that we recommended a few weeks ago, Elsewhere USA, is about the same sort of thing, that all of a sudden it's becoming really obvious. Things are changing very rapidly.
Yep.
So how's the world going to look over the next 100 years? Looks really, really interesting. So I just grabbed this one literally today. So
The conclusion is that this guy knows what he's talking about.
Well, I haven't gone to the conclusion, Leo. So we'll have to get back to that.
The Times agrees.
That was Elsewhere USA is sort of like that. You know, I'm reading this book, and again, you hit this thing. I mentioned it to my wife. My wife ended up reading the book separately in print form because I kept talking about it so much. But I kept waiting for that thing at the end where they say, well, okay, now here's what we can do about it. And honestly, there isn't that much.
You're out of luck.
It's really, you're kind of screwed.
You're screwed. It's the way that, that's good. I like an uplifting book like that.
But I mean, it, you know, if you look at a book that's maybe 500 pages long, at the end, there's maybe 3 pages about here's what you can do. And it's not,
And, you know, I have to say, anything anybody predicts is going to be kind of moot anyway. Who knows what you can do? But if you can at least kind of understand what the changes are going to be, it gives you some way to kind of prepare yourself for it. You know, The Next 100 Years, A Forecast for the 21st Century by George Friedman, read by William Hughes. Brand new. There is a 5-minute excerpt you can listen to for free, but you can get this whole book for free if you go to audible.com/windows. I now listen at least half an hour a day in the gym, which means I'm starting to get through books faster. And it's great. It gives me a reason to go to the gym. It gives you a reason to you know, where your Audible, your iPhone or your iPod or your Zune or your Kindle or whatever it is you're listening. It works on hundreds of different devices. This is a great way to get your brains, build your brain. It's brain building while you're bodybuilding. Audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of the Windows Weekly Show. Your tip of the week, sir.
Yes. If you follow the tech news at all, you may notice today, especially
lately.
Oh, okay.
That.
Well,
what's
some
going
listeners,
on?
Some listeners might.
Anything
well,
happening?
You may notice today on Wednesday, suddenly there are a lot of stories out there about Windows 7 in the enterprise, you know, Windows 7 for businesses. Here's what Microsoft says. You know. And the reason for that is over the past week, Microsoft has been going around talking to the press about this very topic. So all of a sudden everyone's writing about it.
Right.
I had that meeting in New York last week. They asked us to wait until this week to talk about any of this stuff, even though most of it has been known, you know, for a long time. I think the theory being that they wanted to give everyone an equal opportunity to be briefed on this information, and then we could go talk about it. But so this is a Windows 7 tip. But if you're using the Windows 7 beta and you're going to be using Windows 7 going forward, one of the really cool features that actually is available to everyone now, because the Windows 7 beta is the Ultimate Edition, which includes all of the features, something called BitLocker to Go, which is the full disk encryption for portable devices, right?
Oh, neat.
Typically something you'd plug in with a USB cord or whatever. So this applies to hard drives. It applies to USB memory keys, you know, any kind of external storage. The difference between BitLocker, which is the previous technology that Microsoft had for full disk encryption, and BitLocker to Go is that once you've encrypted something with BitLocker to Go, it's not actually tied to that PC. So once you have encrypted it, and to do that encryption, you actually do have to have Windows 7 Enterprise or Windows 7 Ultimate, which, again, you do have on the beta. Once you've done that, the disk can be used on any Windows 7 system. It can be Windows 7 Home Basic. It doesn't matter. When you plug the disk in, you'll get a little pop-up so you can type in your password. And you can have it not require that in the future. That's your choice. But what's interesting about it is down level, when you go down to Windows XP or Windows Vista, there's actually a BitLocker reader application that's installed, and it allows you to get the contents off of the drive. Now, the limitation there is on XP and Vista, you can't write to the drive. But what this thing is again, full disk encryption. And the reason that's important is if you're storing important information on this USB memory key, which, let's face it, these things are, they're like chiclets, right? You could lose this thing and not even notice it. If there's important information on there, but it's encrypted, no one else can get at it. So, yes, they could wipe the disk out, obviously, and use it for themselves, but they wouldn't be able to get at your data. So it's a great way to protect data, essentially for free. And one thing you might notice today is if you go to an electronics superstore or whatever, you can actually spend extra now on these special USB memory keys that include this kind of technology. But if you have Windows 7, you get it for free.
Very cool.
Yeah, and it works great.
BitLocker. I mean,
BitLocker,
the guy.
I will say, by the way, if you're going to encrypt a hard drive, prepare for an all-day...
Oh, does it take a while?
Encryption fest. Yeah, it takes a long time. It's not bad on a USB memory key, obviously. You know, 16 gigs or smaller. No problem. I did do a 320 gig drive and wanted to... you can't sit there and watch it happen. It's like watching, you know, bread toast.
And you can't take, can you take full disk encryption with you to go? I guess you couldn't. I mean, unless you did like a USB drive.
It is full disk encryption. So that's essentially what it is.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, but now the difference.
It's not file by file at all, ever.
No, it's not like a folder based encryption. Oh, okay. It literally is the full disk. And that's what makes this kind of special. It's the whole thing.
So now you could put it on a thumb drive, for instance.
Yep, exactly right.
Cool. So that's actually a very good idea, because a thumb drive is really at risk. You know, Steve Gibson was talking on security now. We got an email from a guy who works in an auto repair store. He said, the first thing you do is you look, if there's a thumb drive on the keychain, you take it, you copy everything off of it, because there's usually music and stuff. Then you rip all the CDs. Yep.
Absolutely.
So this is a good idea. Lock your...
I mean, hackers bring these things around to trade shows, and they plug them into computers to steal information, you know.
So BitLocker is, Ultimate on Windows Vista. Will it be Ultimate on Windows 7 only also, or will it be?
It is Enterprise and Ultimate only on Windows 7 for BitLocker to go. But again, once you've applied this to a disk or
then you can read it anywhere. Yeah.
You can use it on any Windows 7 system. Right. So,
well, this is a reason to get Ultimate.
You can set it up all now during the beta when you have Ultimate, and then if you buy Home Premium, you can still use it.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. Software of the week, my friend.
Yeah, so this one, you know, I have to say over the last months or weeks, I've gotten a lot of emails about it. The one that tipped this off was from Joe Brady, so thank you for that. And it's just an open source and free file archiver. You know, I happen to use something called WinRAR, but the truth behind WinRAR is that it's not free. You actually have to pay for it, which I do. And it's also a little on the technical side. So this application is called 7-Zip. It's at 7-zip.org, and it supports all the popular file formats, you know, zip and RAR and all this stuff. And it works well. It looks great. It's just, you know, it's a simple application. So, you know, rather than paying for something like WinZip or WinRAR in my case, you know, 7-zip is just a free way to go for this kind of thing. And if you're using Windows, you know, Microsoft includes this bogus compressed folders thing. This is terrible. This is one of those things. You have to have some kind of an archiver in Windows separate from the operating system, because the one that comes with it is just so horrible. So this is a great choice.
This is good. I'm going to put this on my list of whenever I install Windows, I got to download that. That's great.
Yeah, it is that type of application. Yeah. It's like that list of things you have to do each time.
Yeah. 7-zip, 7-zip.org. And with that, we're going to zip this up, button it up, put it to bed.
We have run 4 minutes over. I apologize to
Steve
Gibson that I'm keeping on the horn here.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, Paul. Paul is off for Colorado for yet another briefing. We won't say with whom. But actually, if you think about it, what big computer company's in Colorado? May still not limit it.
I was going to say, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know who I'm meeting with.
It's in a secret location deep under a mountain. They used to, they used to have missiles down there. Mm-hmm. Now it's a secure computer briefing center. Paul, well, have a great trip. I hope you could talk about what you're talking about when you come back, because it sounds very interesting. And
not when I get back, but eventually.
Someday. Of course, you read everything at Supersite for Windows. That's winsupersite.com. It's a great website. Of course, he's the Windows, the news editor for Windows IT Pro. You're going to meet with them out there in Loveland. Mm-hmm. And look for his book, Windows Vista Secrets, in bookstores everywhere. Paul Theriot, have a great week. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.